I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are accompanied by many associates, such as Vishwaksena. I offer all the paraphernalia for worshiping you. One should chant this mantra every day with great attention while worshiping Lord Vishnu with all paraphernalias, such as water for washing his feet, hands and mouth, and water for his bath. One must offer him various presentations for his worship, such as garments, sacred thread, ornaments, scents, flowers, incense, and lamps. Srila Prabhupada gives a very short purport to this verse. This mantra is very important. Anyone engaged in deity worship should chant this mantra, as quoted above, beginning with Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya. Text number 8. Hari Shesham Chajuhu Jat Anale Dvadashahuti Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahabibhuti Pataye Swaha Iti. Translation to text number 8. Sukadev Goswami continued, after worshipping the Lord with all the paraphernalia mentioned above, one should chant the following mantra while offering 12 oblations of ghee on the sacred fire. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahavibhuti Pataye Swaha. Text number 9. Now we can all chant together. Sriyam Vishnu Chavarado. Sriyam Vishnu Chavarado. Ashisham Prabhavo Ubhau. Ashisham Prabhavo Ubhau. Bhaktya Sampuja Janityam. Bhaktya Sampuja Janityam. Bhaktya Sampuja Janityam. Chadichet Sarvam Sampada.
Chadichet Sarvam Sampada.
Chadichet Sarvam Sampada.
Chadichet Sarvam Sampada.
Devotees.
Oh.
Shridam,
the
goddess of fortune.
Vishnu,
Lord Vishnu. Cha,
and
Baradau,
the
bestowers
of benedictions.
Ashisham,
of
blessings.
Prabhavo,
the
sources.
Ubau,
both.
Bhaktya,
with
devotion.
Sampujajet,
should
worship.
Nityam,
daily.
Jadi,
if.
Ichet,
desires.
Sarva,
all.
Sampadaha,
opulences.
Translation:
if one desires
all opulences,
his duty
is to daily
worship Lord
Vishnu
with his wife
Lakshmi.
With
great devotion,
one
should worship him
according to
the above mentioned
process.
Lord Vishnu
and the goddess of
fortune
are an
immensely powerful
combination.
They are
the bestowers
of all
benedictions
and
the sources
of all
good fortune.
Therefore,
the duty
of everyone
is
to
worship
Lakshmi
Narayan.
Purport
by His Divine
Grace, A.C.
Bhaktivedanta
Swami Srila
Prabhupada
Ki Jai.
Lakshmi
Narayan, Lord
Vishnu, and
Mother Lakshmi
are
always situated
in everyone's
heart.
Ishvara
sarvabhutanam
rideshe
arjuna
tishtati.
However,
because
non-devotees
do not
realize that
Lord Vishnu
stays
with his
eternal consort,
Lakshmi,
within
the hearts of
all living
entities,
they are
not endowed
with the
opulence
of Lord Vishnu.
Unscrupulous
men
sometimes
address
a poor
man as
Daridra
Narayan
or
Poor Narayan.
This is
most
unscientific.
Lord
Vishnu and
Lakshmi are
always
situated
in
everyone's heart.
But
this does
not
mean
that
everyone
is Narayan,
especially
not those
in poverty.
This is
a most
abominable
term
to
use in
connection
with
Narayan.
Narayan
never
becomes
poor,
and
therefore
he can
never be
called
Daridra
Narayan.
Narayan
is certainly
situated
in everyone's
heart,
but he
is neither
poor
nor rich.
Only
unscrupulous
persons
who do not
know the
opulence of
Narayan
try to
afflict
him
with
poverty.
Namam
Vishnu
Padaya
Krishna
Prastaya
Bhutale
Srimate
Bhaktivedanta
Swamini
Tinamine.
Namaste
Saraswati
Deve
Gauravani
Pracharine
Nirvisesha
Sunyavadi
Pasyatyadeshatarine.
Jaya
Sri Krishna
Chaitanya
Prabhu
Nityananda
Sri
Advaita
Gadadhara
Shivasari
Gaura
Bhakta Vrindam.
Hare
Krishna,
Hare
Krishna,
Krishna
Krishna,
Hare
Hare.
Hare
Rama,
Hare Rama,
Rama
Rama,
Hare
Hare.
So,
today,
this
part
of this
Pum
Shavana
ceremony,
or right,
described
here.
Before
there were
some descriptions
about
Lakshmi,
the
goddess of
fortune.
But
now
Vishnu
is being
described
for
the
prayers,
or the section
of the prayers
are
addressing
Lord
Vishnu.
And
of course,
like
throughout
the
Bhagavad
philosophy,
one
of the qualities
that it's
often
emphasize
is
that
Krishna
is
the owner
of everything.
He's
the source
of everything.
Aham
sarvahasya
prabhavo.
Krishna
explains in the
Bhagavad Gita,
one
of the essential
texts,
that
I am
the owner
of everything.
So,
the
context
of this
particular
section,
this
is
towards the
end
of
the
sixth
canto,
is
that
the
Lord
gives us
protection in different ways, right? According to the Acharyas, there are, as you know, 10 different topics that Bhagavatam explains: creation, sub-creation, consequent creations, and things like that, which have been already described. Srila Prabhupada says in the beginning of the sixth canto, in the summary of the canto. And he says that the aspect of poshana, or protection, is being described in this. But when we read the context, the historical context of this pastime, it's quite, in some places, convoluted. You know, what happened with Indra, and then, you know, Britasura comes into the scene, and then, you know, Chitraketu, and all these things. But behind all these pastimes, it's how the Lord protects his devotee. That's the essence, we may say. Now, it is very interesting in this section because the prayers refer to Lakshmi and Narayan. And Lakshmi, when we hear about Lakshmi, we're talking about opulences. We're talking about money. We're talking about facilities, etc. So it's very important because we all have something to do. Although some of you may be very, very renowned, still you have to deal with some aspect of Lakshmi, energy, money, facilities, etc. Doesn't matter how renowned you are. Even if you're totally renounced, still you have to deal with this this energy, right? So, a very important, if not decisive, aspect of our spiritual life is exactly that. How do we deal with energy, the energy of Krishna? I think it's in a previous verse, Prabhupada explains that when the energy of the Lord, Lakshmi, it's separated from Vishnu, right? Although she is a spiritual, she becomes the illusory energy. It's transformed, right? So how amazing it is that this same energy, Lakshmi, the energy of Krishna, becomes Maya. Right? How is that? No? Srila Prabhupada explains, if you, very simply, if you just take away Vishnu, right, if you take away Krishna, then the same energy becomes Maya, becomes the illusory energy. And you know, Prabhupada gives this analogy that if we have zeros, many, many zeros, and if we take the one out of it, then the zeros, doesn't matter how many zeros you have, it's all zero. Doesn't mean anything, right? Or no value. But if you just put one, you know, in front of all those zeros, then you have so much, right? So we all have some kind of energy. Some have talents or beauty or knowledge or friends or influence, so many things. And if all these things are devoid of Krishna consciousness, then they are just a waste of time, waste of everything. Yeah. What's that verse? Haritoshanam, samsidhi haritoshanam. Vashista, punyas. Yeah? Haritoshanam, yes. That the purpose of everything, right, in essence, I'm paraphrasing, that we do is to samsidim haritoshanam, that the sum of all perfections is that Krishna is pleased. At the end of the day, that's the bottom line test, that Krishna is pleased. That's all. I remember reading some old Vyasa Puja books, Srila Prabhupada's appearance day. And I remember, I forgot which year it was, but 80-something. And I read several of the senior disciples' offerings, and many of them, coincidentally, or the BBT had arranged it in such a way, but several of them, maybe three or four, end up craving for that, for Srila Prabhupada's smile. That the offerings were like that, you know? That all what the devotees wanted to do when Srila Prabhupada was present, I mean, Srila Prabhupada is present, but I'm referring to those memories of those devotees, is that anything they did was just to obtain a smile from Srila Prabhupada. Right? That was it. If Prabhupada smiled, meaning he was happy, he was pleased, then everything was okay. Everything was perfect. Sam Siddhi Hari Toshana. Because the representative of Krishna has been pleased. So in the same way, here we are, trying, in many cases, imperfectly, to please Krishna, to please the representative of Krishna. But I assume many of us, we do struggle. Or at times we struggle. Sometimes we're doing okay, but then we struggle. I remember that when I just arrived to India many years ago, I was a young brahmachari, enthusiastic but very ignorant. I asked one devotee, you know, because at that time my understanding is that whoever was living here then must be very, very advanced. And so I asked one friend, I said, Prabhu, sometimes I'm very enthusiastic and sometimes I'm very not enthusiastic. And then he told me this. I think Krishna spoke through him. He said, that's a symptom of a neophyte. So he pat me. He says, so it's okay. That's confirmed. You're a neophyte. I had a few years in Krishna consciousness, but I thought, you know, in those days, you had 2-3 years in the movement and you were like already like a senior or something. But it has taken me nearly 30 years after that and still I'm struggling with the same things. So, the Bhagavatam has the purpose of, Prabhupada explains, see Krishna in every page. That's the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when we ask, why all these mantras and processes presented here, the purpose is that, to understand that the energies of the Lord need to be engaged in the service of the Lord. And we are, Prabhupada also mentions this, I forgot where, if it's further or before. Prabhupada says, we are also energy of the Lord. Do you realize that? I mean, theoretically, we may realize it, but, you know, we are energy of the Lord. Yeah? We are parts and parcels of Krishna. I mean, if we think about this, it can create some kind of impression in our consciousness. We are parts and parcels of Krishna. We can maybe say that out loud and think about it for a few minutes and write our realizations. What does that mean? You know, that everything that I do, everything that I have, everything that I wish for, it's meant to be connected with Krishna in order for it to be satisfying. That's what it means. But how many of you, of us, live up to that? I mean, we all read it. How many times we heard it? Thousands of times, perhaps. But how much can we actually apply? That's the question. So here we are, gathered, just like the sages of Naimisharanya, hearing about Krishna. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful narrations about Krishna. It was like Bhagavad Gita, the song of Krishna. Right? Where we also hearing about Him. We're hearing about Him. Because the process is, the more we hear, what happens when you hear? Your heart becomes purified. Your heart becomes clean. So, as Prabhupada translates, the misgivings, right? The misunderstandings, right? Because the core misunderstanding is that, I mean, one of them, I am this body, aham mameti, no? That's one misunderstanding. Right? Another misunderstanding is that everything that I can perceive is meant for my enjoyment. Maybe not everything, but at least those things that I focus on and I say, I want that. You know, I want him and I want her and I want this and I want that. So that is the natural tendency of the conditioned soul. Right? And it's better to admit it from the beginning. Right? So some of you, some of us may have had some kind of inclination for spiritual life, philosophical inclination of sorts. But I don't know your experience, but when I read Prabhupada's books, what shocked me is that he was so convinced of what was our condition, right? Prabhupada called you a fool, just like Krishna called Arjuna a fool in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. It's the same way. You know, you are a conditioned soul. You are trying to enjoy like an animal. Pretty heavy. You know, you expect. Nowadays, you can read so many flowery words around spirituality and everything is about love and this, that, the other. No, Prabhupada, it's very direct, right? Like a surgeon. He just goes to it, goes to the tumor and tries to remove it, right? A lot of blood and a lot of, yeah, gory details. But he goes in there and gets the thing out, right? And when that is completed, you feel good, right? You get a beating, you read Prabhupada's books, and you, I used to argue so much. I mean, mentally, right? No, this, no, that, and how can he say that? No, this is, he's contradicting himself. How, I was just trying to look for faults. In all what Prabhupada said, I was reading the abridged version of the Bhagavad Gita, remember? And I was like literally having like a mental or philosophical wrestling match. But Prabhupada was, you know, strong and it was making sense. It was making sense, right? So at the end of it, you feel good because he had removed this misunderstanding that you are the enjoyer. Right? You are an enjoyer. No different from an animal. Because the animal is thinking the same thing. But you're just sophisticated. Right? You go to university, you go to college. Like Prabhupada says, instead of running in four legs, you're running in four wheels or two wheels. In Mayapur, you have the big bikes. And then, you know. So we're running around thinking, I can enjoy, I want to enjoy. But I shouldn't, right? Because Bhagavatam says, Prabhupada says. So this is the dilemma, the neophyte dilemma. That a neophyte doesn't mean 2 years in the Bhakta program. Neophyte may mean a few lifetimes for us. So going back to the presentation of the Bhagavatam here in the sixth canto, one of the first things that we need to understand, and I know that in some circles, sometimes it's not pleasant to discuss these things. Even it happened in Prabhupada's times. To discuss Krishna's philosophy as it is, right? Sometimes, and Prabhupada warns us, that sometimes we want to jump onto the Leelas. Prabhupada says about reading Bhagavatam, sometimes we want to jump onto the 10th canto, pastimes, rasa dance and things like that. You want to skip the beginning parts, all the creations, sub-creations, and all these things, right? Also, I heard sometimes some of my friends said, oh, why so much Bhagavad Gita? Why so much philosophy? You know, why don't we go to the nectar and the rasika and these kind of things? But as we know, Srila Prabhupada was very emphatic, very emphatic. One time Prabhupada was giving a class, standard class, I guess. And generally, in Prabhupada's class, he will often, if not always, mention the fact that we are not the body, right? Often here. You're not the body, you shouldn't lament, etc., etc. You know, it's a standard class. And a devotee walked out, right? Maybe one of the close servants or, I don't know, administrators of a temple or something. And then Prabhupada notice it. And then after, when he went to his room and the devotee came in, he says, why did you walk out? And the devotee said, oh Prabhupada, I heard, like, you know, when you go to a class, you know, the grammar class, mathematics or something, and then this is a subject that you already heard, right? You heard it many, many times. You already did the lesson, did the homework, did the test. So I don't need to listen, yeah? Sometimes we... So the devotee said, oh, I heard, you know, I saw where the class is going, so I... And no, Prabhupada didn't like it. So no, you haven't heard, you haven't understood. So you have to listen. Yeah, Prabhupada didn't like it. You know, Prabhupada didn't like the devotees walking out of the Bhagavatam class. So, why? Because we need to understand. We need to understand, and we think that we understand. If I ask now how many of you read the Bhagavad Gita, I'm sure many of your hands will go up. Right? How many of you read Bhagavad Gita? There you go. But how many of us have really understood? And I'm not daring you, I'm not challenging you, I'm not questioning your advancement. I'm sure that, I know that many of you, obviously, are very, very advanced. But I can say, in my case, I read many times the Bhagavad Gita, I teach Bhagavad Gita, I preach Bhagavad Gita. But how much I have really understood. I mean, not just for 10 years, and after I retired about it. No, 20 years, 30 years, whatever. But every single day of my life, forever. How much? That's the test. And we, I mean, one thing that ISKCON has is that we have plenty of examples of people who knew Bhagavad Gita, right, and other scriptures, and then they left. They failed, they had problems, etc. So we have, you know, we are very lucky that many of our fellow devotees, seniors, superiors, previous, they did what is right, and also many did what is wrong. So we have to learn from those examples, right? Like when you go to these halls, you know, like companies or sports or something, then you have the pictures, right, of the presidents and the founders and CEOs or whatever you see, yeah? So in the same way, we have the good pictures, and we have some other pictures of what examples we shouldn't follow. So, the purpose of this is that we drill into ourselves, we tattoo it somewhere in our consciousness, that Krishna is the owner of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Aham sarvasya. Everything comes from me, and we also come from him. Right? And when Krishna presents this in the Bhagavad Gita, you see, the first section of the Bhagavad Gita is all about you. Yeah, you realize? The first section of the Bhagavad Gita is all about the jiva and the processes that the jiva can take to be free from all these lamentations and suffering. That's the first section. The middle section is all about Krishna. Krishna's opulence, Krishna's form, Krishna's devotional service. Right? It's all about Krishna. First part, second part. And the third part, it's about how to manage the energies, how to deal with the world. That's why one of the main topics in the third section of the Bhagavad Gita is the modes of material nature. Right? So energies, again, energies is very important. So it's all about energies. Right? So Krishna is the source of those energies. He's the energetic, as Prabhupada describes. And how do we deal with those energies that belong to Krishna? That is the trick. That is the point of this explanation. Now, I think there's a sign that the class should be finishing now, 8:25. So, how does this apply in our life? How do we? I'm sure that all of you have some takas, as they say here. So when we see this pieces of paper and all what it means, or pieces of plastic, right? How do we manage that? Even to have the body, it's an opulence in itself, because you can do so many things, right? You are able to work, you're able to do so many things. But what do we do with those energies? How do we manage that? Yeah. So, and it is important. And another proof that it is important is because it's the first thing that Krishna says about himself. The seventh chapter. How is it called, the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Knowledge of the Absolute. Yeah. And what is that knowledge? The last verse. Right? The last verse explains Adidhaiva, Adijagya, Adibhuta. I am the supreme owner of everything, Adibhuta, Adidhaiva. I am the supreme manager. You know, Daiva means that the devas are managing. So much management, we talk of, you know, in Mayapur we hear a lot about management. Oh, the managers did. Oh, why management doesn't do that? Oh, management. Adidhaiva, I am the supreme manager. And Adijagya, right? I am the supreme everything has to be sacrificed to. Everything has to be given to him. That's what he says. Adidhaiva, Adijagya, Adibhuta. The first thing that that's his credentials. This is who I am. I'm the owner of all what you see, of everything that you can even imagine. I am the owner of you. That's what Krishna is saying. And I'm the maintainer, and I'm the controller. And everything has to come to me. Right? Everything has to be offered to me. That's what Krishna says. Quite a blunt presentation. He doesn't go around the corners. He's just like straight. Right? So why? Because if we understand that, then we have it right. This is how it is. As it is. That's why Prabhupada named his Bhagavad Gita as it is. So in this process it's true. Sometimes we struggle with it. But then what we have to do when we struggle, we just have to go back to the basics. And what are the basics? Krishna is the owner. Krishna is the controller. Krishna is the enjoyer. Right? So all what I do should be in line with that. You know? And when we suffer, and when we are confused, and we have some problems of any kind, then we have to go back to the, what's it called? Troubleshooting. Right? Like at the end of the manuals. Troubleshooting. What do you do? Right? So that's what we need to do. We need to understand who is the owner here. Who's the enjoyer? Right? And then once that it's clear, then things start falling into place. Then what I have to do? You know, it's simple. That's why Prabhupada often call it scientific. Even here he says, to call Narayan Daridra, which means poor, is most unscientific. Yeah, Prabhupada liked that word. Scientific. Yes? Because it doesn't make sense. Right? It doesn't make sense. That Narayan is all of a sudden poor. This is just a flowery words again to describe some kind of misunderstanding, religious misunderstanding, especially in India. Oh, he's the poor. Okay, so people who help the poor, they are so spiritual. Right? That's Daridra Narayan. We know that. That's common here. So, the point in these verses, the point in this chapter, is that in order for us to obtain Krishna's protection, we need to have the right understanding. And this is the beginning, or is it a prelude to Prahlad Maharaj's pastime, right? We are getting ready for that. Right? So sixth canto is finishing, seventh canto is about to start, and then we will see the true protection manifested, full on. Right? Why? Because anything that happened to Prahlad Maharaj, we're just giving you an advanced peak view. Right? Anything that happened to Prahlad Maharaj, he saw Krishna. Jomam Pashyati Sarvatra. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, those who see me in everything. Sometimes we think Krishna is only, and that's also described in Bhagavatam, the neophyte thinks Krishna is only on the altar. I forgot the verse. Getting rusted, my Sanskrit. What's that verse that, you know, the devotee who only sees Krishna on the altar, but he doesn't see the devotees. He only sees Krishna in the altar, but he's a materialistic devotee. Right? What's that? Chaitanya Charitamrita? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's good to have pandits around. You know? You don't need so many of these things. It's called for a pandit. Your Prabhupada used to do that, right? What's that verse? Get it read out. So like that, it's sometimes we think, oh, Krishna is only there. Krishna is only in my Shila. It's only in my altar. It's only there. Go there, here. You know, whenever you're walking there, many of the visitors always ask you, Mandir Kotai, this and that. You have to tell them like this. So Krishna is there. Right, so we think that Krishna is just here. I mean, he's there, but he's also everywhere. And the last point I wanted to make is that for us devotees, and in regards of the energies, and in regards of the opulences, one important thing is that for us practitioners of a spiritual life, we have to see that Krishna's opulence is through the devotees. Krishna gives these chatur shlokas in the Bhagavad Gita, of which you may think, if I have to give chatur shlokas about my life, I will talk a lot about myself. But Krishna, when he gives his chatur shlokas, he talks about the devotees. If you notice, those 10a to 12, right? 8, 9, 10, 11, sorry. He talks about the devotees. First he says, you know, something about himself, but then he talks about the devotees. So the opulence, the real opulence of Krishna are the devotees. You know, so we want to experience the opulence of Krishna, the power of Krishna, then go to the devotees. See how the devotees live. You know, Aishwara Asya Samagrasya. Krishna says, I have six opulences. No, Krishna says, it's referred about Krishna in Vishnu Purana. Right? These are the six qualities. Who is Bhagavan? That's described there. So see how the devotees live. Right? And that doesn't mean that the houses have to be like so big and everything has to be so... But the happiness that the devotees obtain. Right? You see devotees who are very, very simple. They are very happy. Happier than many millionaires around the world. Is that so? Right? Do we believe that? Or we just... It's like a slogan. The devotees are very, very happy. People are working so hard for so long, generations after generations, to obtain happiness, to become rich so they become happy. But a devotee, very simply serving in whatever capacity, whatever area, devotional life, he or she is very happy. So that, it's opulence, right? That's the opulence of a devotee. And that's why Krishna glorifies the devotees. So, in our endeavor, if we want to become happy, because that's natural for us, ananda mayo vyasat, then we learn from the devotees. You know? You're not so happy with your life or your spiritual life. You're lamenting a little bit like Arjuna. Oh, I don't want to do this service. This is too much. You know, I have to fight with this one. It's my, you know, we joined together and now I have... arguing with him and these people are saying this and I have to, you know, whatever situation you're in, right? Just see those devotees who are happy. I see many here in Mayapur, Prabhus and Matis, they look very, very happy. They're doing their service every day, day after day, year after year. They look very blissful. So when we come to Mayapur or when we go to the holy dhams, we go to the temples, we associate with devotees. We don't come to see only, you know, how big the temple is or how opulent the TOVP and how vast this property, etc. We come to see the Vaishnavas, right? There's also a verse. Sorry, I have to admit, I forgot. But that verse that if somebody goes to the holy place only to take bath, it's no better than a... There you go. So you know everything. So... we come here to see the opulence of Krishna, and the opulence of Krishna are the devotees. This is the opulence of Krishna. How many people Prabhupada had turned from, I'm sure not many of you were hippies, but that's what he said, from hippies to happies. Right? So being happy, that's the true test of opulent. Not how many credit cards we have or bank balance or savings or buildings around. Because that doesn't really guarantee you being happy. When you utilize Krishna's energies properly, then you're happy. Yeah, that's priceless. I think there's a credit card who uses that. Priceless. So being happy, it's priceless. There's no price. There's no much, there's no currency that can buy that. Only bhakti. Bhakti amam abhijnanati. Right? And we have the perfect example, and with this we finish. I heard this from Devamrita Swami in one of his lectures. He said that Prabhupada wanted to be rich. He was giving a class in Australia. I was living there. I was working very hard, trying to be rich so I can be happy. And I can do my service peacefully, and everything will be perfect. I was totally wrong. And I heard his class, and it was right what I needed. He said Prabhupada tried all his life to be rich. Not all his life, but before dedicating fully to preaching, to his missionary service. He wanted to be a businessman. He tried here, he tried there. He went traveling around India. He was working very, very hard. Imagine Prabhupada, very meticulous, very diligent. But still he didn't make it. One thing failed, one other thing failed. Yeah, failure after failure. You know, you get these, particularly Americans, stories, you know, failure after failure, and they become super millionaire, right? Right, isn't it? But Prabhupada fail after failure, failure after failure, failure after failure. And then he said, nah, I'm just gonna... He wanted to be rich, so he can preach Krishna consciousness, yeah? How many of us are thinking of that? Oh, once I'm rich, then I can go and live in Mayapur and do this, everything, whatever. So Prabhupada tried all these things, he failed. Right? And Maharaj said, Prabhupada wanted to be a successful businessman, but Krishna turned him into a beggar. Right? So when he said that, it didn't go well, right? Because how you... And why I say this, he said? Because Prabhupada signs his poem when he arrived to America, "Your Insignificant Beggar." Yeah? So Maharaj was explaining that a full cycle of pastimes and lessons Srila Prabhupada was manifesting, was displaying that he tried so hard and apparently he failed. And when he admitted, okay, you know what? I just take $7, right? Or the equivalent at that time. Take my Bhagavatam, first canto, three parts, a pair of cartels, a couple of pictures, Panchatattva, and another picture, I think. And off he went. That's it, you know. And he signed an insignificant beggar. I'm not anymore the big manager of this company or wanting to do... No, I'm just an insignificant beggar. So Maharaj's point was, until we come to that realization, I have nothing. I try this, I fail. I try that, I fail. So many things I fail. So I'm nothing. I want to serve. As Prabhu was saying 2 days ago in the class, quoting Bhagavatam, Nimitra Bhavasya Vasachin, just become an instrument. And then everything works. Then everything's... Why? Because you're happy. Right? Okay, so we're meant to end here, since the class now is shorter. Still we're over time. If there's any questions or point, yes. I think there's a mic. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. In the class you mentioned of the energy of Krishna, and I want to ask if everything is actually the energy of Krishna. So when we go outside the temple, I feel very bad. I mean, I don't, you know, but it's Krishna's energy, you know. There has to be like
so when you say about the energy of Krishna, when you go outside the temple, you don't feel good. Okay. So, what is the question? Don't go outside the temple. Stay in the temple. Maybe Krishna wants you in the temple, wants you to do something. Sometimes Krishna arranges. He's very cunning. He knows. He knows what to do. Sometimes he makes us feel... I've been in places, believe me, I thought I was in paradise, but then my experience was very miserable. And I thought I'd rather go back to temple, go back to Mayapur. So sometimes Krishna arranges like that. Maybe that's... it could be partly your misunderstanding. It could be partly, you know, that Krishna wants you inside the temple. Maybe he's telling you, stay in the temple. Outside, maybe not good. Sometimes that happens. Many people experience that, actually. You're not alone. Many people leave ISKCON. Have you read those stories? You know, Prabhupada disciples, they left. You know, after Prabhupada left, you know, oh no, ISKCON is not the same, this, that, the other. So many. I mean, I don't know. I have read many. And then they come back, they had some realization, or they get sick, or this, the other. And then they come back and so appreciative, and so stay in the temple. What can I say? I mean, if you want to see other things, then, we have to read more, we have to. Or if we go, also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that, what does he say in regards of staying in India? What did he say? If we live outside, it's just for preaching. Right? If we just go out, the temple or the dham, it's just for preaching. But how many of us really are just going out for preaching? Like that. Anyway, any other question? Comments? Corrections? Chastisements? No? It's all good? Okay. Gantarachmut Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi.